Perhaps if I just start things off for you, Justin, you made mention of workforce issues, and we know out there that there is a shortage of staff. Health Partners is the biggest private provider of dental services in South Australia, and we're continually looking for dentists, and we talk to the university. And you mentioned in your presentation that just putting more people through the university system is not the solution. Would you like to elaborate on that for us?
I think all the three universities in the room would understand that our training is bursting at the seams with trying to deliver training. As regards dentists, medicine, nursing, allied health, it's actually looking at probably going down a path of a basic science training that then allows people to move into multi-skill areas is where we need to go. As regards dentistry, the dental school, which sits under my faculty, is looking at trying to develop models where oral health practitioners can be involved in managing the workload for dentistry. There is a dental shortage in the state, which most people in the room would know, but training it is extremely expensive. Now, the oral health model is where we need to go. However, there is problems with the turf wars, the change process required to get that to happen, and I think part of the workforce change is actually getting people to understand that we do have to move past the traditional silos of medicine, nursing and dentistry.
Thank you.
Paul Daldig, University of Adelaide. Just a question for either the Minister or Justin. Is there a health system anywhere in the world that you think has got it as close to right as possible?
I was a slight anecdote first. I was looking at issues to do with obesity, and I talked to an obesity expert in London recently about societies who are trying to deal with the obesity epidemic, and I looked at a system they're using in London, in France, which seems to me to be working pretty well. But it's not that dramatic. And the person I was speaking to, a professor from one of the London universities, said, well, the Singaporean government had a very good and effective method for dealing with obesity. And I said, well, how does that work? And they said, well, the children come to school, they measure them, and if they're over whatever the standard weight is, then they're not allowed to eat lunch with the rest of their classmates. They have to go into a separate room and they're fed a particular diet. And then after school, they're not allowed to go home. They have to go through an exercise regime for an hour or two every day. And as a result of that, the obesity levels in children in Singapore have come down quite dramatically. I'm not too sure what's gone up dramatically in Singapore as a result of that or what that means for the future. So it's a bit hard to say because cultural variances happen. But there are a couple of systems that I've looked at which I like. The New Zealand healthcare system has the advantage of having only one layer of government and the kind of equivalent, they don't have an equivalent to Medicare, so patients tend to pay, but doctors are subsidised by the state on a capitation basis. So every citizen enrols with a particular doctor. The doctor's then given a fee for that patient based on their age and the complexity of their illness and so on. There's more money paid if you're a Pacific Islander or a Maori. And so they get a budget. And then with that budget, they buy health services for that community. So they invest a lot more in primary health care and prevention and have dietitians and lifestyle coaches because the more healthy they keep their patients, the more profitable their practice is. So it changes the emphasis. I mean, our system really rewards doctors looking after people who are ill. And, you know, we all hear about the six-minute consultation. I don't think most doctors like that. When you talk to country doctors, country doctors like their practice because they can spend more time, they're involved in more complex activities. I'm not advocating that New Zealand system, but it does seem to me have a greater focus on prevention and primary health care. They also, in New Zealand, don't invest as heavily in technology. I don't think they have an MRI machine in the whole country, and if patients really do need one, they send them to Sydney by aircraft. And so different kind of emphasis. I'm not too sure that would go down well in Australia, but I think if you looked at the mortality rates, New Zealanders compare pretty well with Australians. And so, you know, from an objective basis, it's as good a system as ours is, but there's probably a whole lot of other factors that might climb higher hills or something.
Thank you. Any other questions from the floor?
Hearn from Health Partners. There is a school of thought at the moment that I guess the health minister and the supporting services, the tertiary institutions, are dealing with, I guess, the end result. There's a school of thought that's saying now that perhaps the issues around health and chronic disease and all the things that are causing problems for us now lie at a higher level, and I just would be interested in your comments about what feedback you might be giving to your ministerial colleagues about what they can be doing within their portfolios around changing some of the things at, I think, what they call the primordial level in our society that might help prevent or make your job a little bit easier.
Well, I think that really goes to the point that Justin was making about the, all of the social and other factors which contribute to health. I spend a bit of time each year up in the APY lands in the north west of the state, and Justin and I went there last May or June or something to have a look at the system. There are several thousand people who live in the most arid part of our state. They have a very, very good healthcare system in place there, which is in many ways a model for the kind of healthcare system we should have in all of South Australia. Every citizen in that area has a unique number, so the Nunapa Health, which runs the service, is able to keep track of everybody. The incidence of some of the chronic conditions that they were facing, such as petrol sniffing, have diminished quite dramatically. The birth weight of babies is going up because a whole lot of prenatal care programs that are put in place. Sexually transmitted diseases have fallen. So there's a whole lot of preventative and chronic disease management systems that they have put in place through this very, very good healthcare service run by a committed, devoted team of doctors and nurses. But the reality is their health is still not very good, and the reason their health is not very good is because of the other circumstances. The food that they eat is often very poor quality. It comes in very expensively and is sold in canteens, and it's often what we might call fast food. There's not a lot of activities for a lot of the young people to be involved in a regular basis. There are issues to do with drinking and smoking and a whole lot of other factors, which is really pointing to what you're saying. So the health service can be fantastic, but the health outcomes aren't very good if all the other factors in a community aren't going well. So transportation is a big issue in that community. And housing, the availability of housing is particularly important, and provision of sanitation and so on. All of those things that apply there, I guess, apply in the broader community. We're lucky in Adelaide. Most of us live in pretty good housing. We have reasonable access to a whole range of other services. Transportation is pretty good, and so on and so forth. But there does, if you look around this room or look around any room of people who are well off and comfortable and middle class, too many of us are overweight, too many of us smoke, too many of us drink, too many of us don't get enough exercise. Ultimately, there's so much a government can do, but it seems to me at some point you have to, particularly with well-educated people, you've got to point to personal responsibility too. Where does personal responsibility end and the state's responsibility begin? And I think a lot of us have kind of grown up with the view that we do whatever we like, and if we get sick, there's a service there that will make us better again, without actually internally understanding that it's our own responsibility. Now, you can understand people who are in depressed circumstances, who are lonely or grief-stricken or have particular issues, will turn to something to make them feel better, and that's often drugs or alcohol or fast food or whatever. But the stats show that over 50% of South Australians are overweight or obese, and I just don't believe that all of those people are overweight or obese in those circumstances. Well, I can certainly say it for myself. I'm overweight, and I'm not at all depressed. I just eat too much.
One of the things I think that the GP Plus strategy will have to confront is involving the education department, local government departments, transport, to make sure that the regions actually set up structures to make it easy for people to look after their health. And I think where we have struggled in the state is because if the debate, for example, around where childhood clinics should it be in the education department or the health department, is there an indication of where some of the issues we have to confront with. So I'm really hoping the GP Plus, with its right framework, can give us some answers to the future that allow us to plan for Elizabeth, Manapara, Burnside, Noarlunga, and get the getting running tracks, bicycle things, the things that actually will make it easier for people to lose weight and or not stop smoking. And I think that's a big ask, and I look forward to this space.